This is Focus West Michigan for Tuesday, January 6, 2026. I'm Joe Bilecki with your local news. A new partnership is launching this month, connecting Grand Rapids Promise Zone students with leaders in West Michigan's high-demand industries, WGVU's Patrick Center reports.
The Grand Rapids Promise Zone Authority and the Grand Rapids Chamber are partnering on a new initiative called Career Pathways, bridging the gap between education and employment by connecting students directly to employers in targeted industries. The Grand Rapids Promise removes financial barriers to higher education for students graduating from eligible high schools, covering tuition, fees, and books, along with credits for expenses like food and transportation. It offers Grand Rapids Chamber resources, providing access to area business leaders in high-demand sectors, including health sciences, skilled trades, business, technology, and hospitality services. The Chamber will provide resume guidance, interview preparation, and insights into workforce expectations. Students will have small group conversations with industry professionals and on-site business experiences. The partnership expands on the Promise Zone's five-year history with Grand Rapids Community College and new transfer agreements with Ferris State University and Grand Valley State University. Since its launch in 2020, the Grand Rapids program has grown from 245 students to nearly 800 enrolled this past fall, supporting over 2,000 students to date. I'm Patrick Center.
Ottawa County is ready to unveil a collection of small footprint home plans free for the public to download and use. WGVU's David Limbaugh has the details.
Less than 2 years ago, the Ottawa County Housing Commission and Department of Strategic Impact began considering how to increase housing supply by facilitating and encouraging the construction of smaller footprint homes. This week, the OHCH and DSI will launch a completely revamped website that includes small footprint home plans, which will be free to the public to download. After completing a short survey, website visitors can view and download different home designs and plans. Houses range in size from 440 square feet to just over 1,000 square feet, and feature interchangeable exterior themes designed to fit within different communities. Plans also include material recommendations. This is the next major step in Ottawa County's continuing efforts to educate the public about the value and benefits of building smaller, while collaborating with local decision makers and planners to review local ordinances. The website will go live on Thursday, January 8th at 10 a.m. during the county's first Housing Commission meeting of the year. I'm David Limbaugh.
Coming up soon, a preview of WGVU Public Television's presentation of PBS Frontline, Strike on Iran, the Nuclear Question. But first, news from around the state. The U.S. Supreme Court will hear arguments next month on a procedural question involving Enbridge's Line 5. The court could decide if state or federal courts will decide whether Enbridge Energy can continue to operate the controversial oil and natural gas liquids pipeline in the Straits of Mackinac. We have more from Rick Pluta.
At issue is whether Enbridge missed a deadline to move the case from a Michigan courtroom to a federal court, where the energy company would face better odds of winning. Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel says Enbridge missed the deadline and that the operation of Line 5 is a state issue that should be resolved in state courts. The U.S. Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled with the state attorney general in a 2024 decision. Enbridge says the issues in this case include treaty rights and court decisions from other jurisdictions that make federal courts the appropriate venue. I'm Rick Pluta.
Former Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan is trying to carve a path down the middle in his independent campaign for governor. Colin Jackson reports that's amid heavy criticism from Democrats.
Duggan is a former Democrat who's pitching himself as a candidate focused on helping people rather than entering the Republican versus Democrat fray.
The Republicans and Democrats with their outrage machines on whatever the latest thing that Trump said, I'm not going to get into that. I'm going to deal with solving problems.
But Michigan Democratic Party Chair Curtis Hertel says Duggan should take a stronger stance regarding President Donald Trump's policies on tariffs, healthcare, and other areas.
At the end of the day, they affect Michigan's people. And when you're governor, sometimes you have to stand up and fight back. And he has shown zero willingness to actually do that.
Duggan says he has spoken out when he feels Michigan is impacted. I'm Colin Jackson.
Detroit Mayor Mary Sheffield announced the city will participate in RX Kids. The cash assistance program for infants and new mothers is designed to reduce poverty and improve health outcomes. RX Kids provides $1,500 to pregnant women and $500 a month during the first 6 months of a child's life. Sheffield says more than half of the children in Detroit are living in poverty.
That means that too many of our children are entering life's journey burdened by financial hardship before they even take their first steps. That reality to me is unacceptable.
Sheffield says she hopes to have the program launched in the city within her first 100 days. To pay for the program, the city has raised $9 million and needs an additional $2.5 million. Focus West Michigan is brought to you by listeners like you. To support this show and everything we do here, visit WGVUnews.org and click the donate button. And for a weekly dose of news right to your inbox, sign up for the WGVU newsletter. Now streaming on PBS Frontline, Strike on Iran, The Nuclear Question. This past June, escalating tensions between Israel and Iran erupted into all-out war. Over the course of 12 days, Israel bombed targets related to Iran's nuclear program and assassinated scientists in their homes. Iran launched retaliatory airstrikes on Israel, and the U.S. carried out airstrikes on key Iranian nuclear facilities. What was the impact of this unprecedented Israel-U.S. bombing campaign on Iran's nuclear program? WGVU's Patrick Center talks with correspondent Sebastian Walker.
There wasn't a huge amount of coverage beyond, you know, the initial period of the war itself. And I think it's partly because the access is so hard. You really don't get very close to these places that, you know, were in the headlines, Fordo, Natanz, Isfahan, these nuclear sites that the U.S. bombed in June. So that was really the starting point for us. We managed to get access inside Iran and set out on a journey to try to get as close to examining the extent of the damage as we could and really investigating the impact of these strikes that we've heard so much about.
What were the challenges? Did the governments, and I say governments, because we had both Israel and the United States involved in this, what were some of the roadblocks that you had to overcome?
Well, extensive. I mean, it's always challenging to operate in Iran. I've reported from there several times. You know, you're always closely monitored, tightly controlled, accompanied by government-approved personnel everywhere you go. It's not really a very free reporting environment at all. But this time, it was even more so. This was, you know, just a short period of time after the strikes, so very sensitive moments. So to have an American crew on the ground coming in and kind of going to these sites, these strike sites where bombs fell and assassinated nuclear scientists, it was just even more scrutinized and we were monitored more than ever before. So yeah, it's a challenging place to have authentic reporting able to be done, but it definitely was eye-opening to be able to see these places that we'd heard about. And we did get to visit sites where on the night of June 13, a series of bombs fell, and taking out key people that Israel has said are key members of Iran's nuclear program. So that's kind of the first half of the film, is us in these places filming and sending material back to our collaboration partners that they could analyze and fold into their investigative work to try to understand how much this has set Iran's nuclear program back. We weren't allowed to access the key sites where the US bombs fell. Those are places that Iran is keeping very much out of public view. They're trying to preserve as much mystery as they can about the impact of these strikes. So we asked for access to Fordo and Natanz. We did get to journey down to Isfahan, the city of Isfahan, which is where one of the largest nuclear sites is located. But we weren't allowed to get close to the site. We could only film from afar. The sites we had access to were these strike sites where nuclear scientists were living, apartment blocks in downtown Tehran that on the night of June 13 were hit by almost simultaneous strikes occurring over a very short period of time, taking out key names in Iran's nuclear program. So we went to three or four of these locations and were able to film and send material back to our collaboration partners. And you really get an understanding of, you know, the scale of those attacks. This is something strategically very different from what Israel has done in the past. There are assassinations that have been carried out in Iran of nuclear scientists, you know, as far back as 2007, but they've often been done in a very small scale, covert, highly complex operation, whereas this was different in nature. This was large-scale, heavy munitions, And no covert aspect of this, Israel announced that they'd taken out these scientists. They wanted people to know that these were Israeli strikes that had done this. So it really kind of speaks to a different political environment in some way, that this was a sea change from what we've seen before with its campaign of assassinations of nuclear scientists in Iran.
What is the U.S. role in this? There was a major bombing campaign.
Yes. And then on the 10th day of the conflict, the U.S. joined in. So the U.S. dropped large munitions known as massive ordnance penetrators, or MOPs, that are 30,000-pound bombs, bunker-busting bombs designed to use the kinetic energy from the vertical fall from the plane that's launching these munitions to burrow deep underground to try to cause damage in these underground chambers. In Fordo, for example, is one of the places that is buried under a mountain range. So it's hard for conventional weapons to actually cause damage in those places. So Israel did target nuclear sites as well as these nuclear scientists. But on the 10th day of the campaign, the US joined in, and it was one of the most complex aerial missions the US Air Force has ever carried out. These MOPs were being used in combat for the first time. And the big question is how much damage was caused by these strikes. So that's something we were exploring on the ground with senior officials from the Iranian government. We managed to speak with Ali Larijani, who is Secretary of the Supreme National Security Council, very senior role. Basically Iran's top security official and chief nuclear negotiator, and asked him about, you know, the big question of how much damage was done to the facilities, how much this has set Iran's nuclear program back. We put a lot of the claims that we heard from the Trump administration to Iranian officials and got responses to that, which you see in the film as well. It's a quite remarkable interview. This was his first interview since the 12-day war to an American outlet. So very kind of significant moment for him to be sitting down and talking about how much damage was done to their nuclear program, how much this had set things back, and whether it was going to bring about some kind of change in course. That's another question everyone has about whether or not this is going to make Iran come to the table, whether this is going to cause a change in thinking about the determination to keep the nuclear program going. And some of the responses to those questions were pretty eye-opening. There was a pretty defiant response to that claim from Ali Larijani that essentially the nuclear program cannot be destroyed. And when I asked him about President Trump's claim that the facilities had been obliterated and whether that was true or not, he coyly suggested that we should ask the president himself and didn't want to go much further than that. But I think this is really kind of getting at the question of what's next here, whether Iran is now going to change course.
So one of the main takeaways from conversations with top Iranian officials who we sat down with in Tehran is that essentially the message was that Iran's nuclear program can never be destroyed, that once you have invented this technology, you can always replace facilities or scientists who've been assassinated, that this is something that will always be able to continue. So there was a kind of defiant tone there from the officials that we met. And another piece of the reporting that we were able to do on the ground in partnership with our collaboration partners, the Washington Post and Bellingcat, was essentially explore this new activity that's been detected at a nuclear site near Natanz. It's known as Pickaxe Mountain, and this is a site that wasn't bombed by the US or Israel, but where recently there has been activity detected, such as construction vehicles being present, tunneling activity suspected, with the excavation being seen to be proceeding. Kind of speaks to what's next here and the question of whether these strikes could potentially have just pushed the nuclear program further underground now that the IAEA doesn't have the same kind of access as it used to have. That's going to be a concern for the international community, and it was one of the takeaways from our trip.
Strike in Iran, the nuclear question, is currently streaming at pbs.org/frontline. You can also find it at PBS app and also the PBS Passport. Correspondent Sebastian Walker, all the way from London, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
This has been Focus West Michigan from WGVU for Tuesday, January 6, 2026. I'm Joe Bilecki. Our audio operations manager is Rick Bierling, and our news and public affairs director is Patrick Center. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll be back with more news and events in West Michigan tomorrow. Thanks for listening.